I'd like to read to you this evening something from the Letters of the Scattered Brotherhood, and this one is from Emerson's journal. Not thanks, not prayer, seem quite the highest or truest name for our communications with the infinite, but glad conspiring reception, reception that becomes giving in its turn, as the receiver is only the all-giver in part and in infancy. I cannot, nor can any man, speak precisely of things so sublime, but it seems to me the wit of man, his strength, his grace, his art, is the grace and presence of God. It is beyond explanation. When all is said and done, the rapt saint is found the only logician. Not exhortation nor argument becomes our lips, but paeans of joy and praise. It is God in us which checks the language of petition by a grander thought. In the bottom of the heart it is said, I am. By me, O child, this fair body and world of thine stands and grows. I am. All things are mine, and all mine are thine. And I'd like to read also something written by Brother Lawrence in the 17th century. I worshipped him the oftenest that I could, keeping my mind in his holy presence. I found no small trouble in that exercise, and yet I continued it, without troubling or disquieting myself when my mind wandered involuntarily. Even in the height of my business, I drove away from my mind everything that was capable of interrupting my thought of him. When we are faithful to keep ourselves in his holy presence, it also begets in us a holy freedom wherewith we ask the graces we stand in need of. Those whose spirits are stirred by the breath of the Holy Spirit go forward even in sleep. If the vessel of our soul is tossed with winds and storms, let us wake the Lord, who reposes in it, and he will quickly calm the sea. He lays no great burden upon us. A little remembrance of him from time to time, a little adoration, sometimes to pray for his grace, sometimes to offer him your sorrows, and sometimes to offer him thanks for the benefits he has given you, and still gives you in the midst of your troubles. He asks you to console yourself with him the oftenest you can. Lift up your heart to him, even at your meals when you are in company. The least little remembrance will always be acceptable to him. You need not cry very loud. He is nearer than you think. Our Bible reading tonight is St. Matthew chapter 7, beginning with verse 1. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge shall ye be judged, and with what measure ye meet it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. I want to talk to you tonight. The subject is asked, seek, and knock. You know, so many people have problems today that it is unbelievable. I don't think there's anybody in the world but one has a problem. And we go around crying about our problems. We don't stop to think that problems are the greatest blessings that can be given to us. The first thing that we must do is to think positively when any problem comes before us. You know, there's always a soft spot in every problem if you can find it. And if you sit down and write out all of the details of your problem and then go to work on it creatively instead of negatively, you will find that soft spot. You will find that it is a challenge to your ingenuity and not just a burden to be carried upon your back. You must think positively. You have to clear your mind of all negative thoughts. Now, it's very difficult when you have a problem to do this. But the way you do it is to stop thinking about the problem and put your mind upon God. If you will do this every time you have a need, regardless of what that is, if you will go above the need, above the problem, and place your mind in with full trust, full faith upon God alone, knowing that He is going to take care of that need for you, that He is going to give you the means by which you may solve that problem, you will find that it disappears. I've had a great many problems in my lifetime from the time I was born. My first conscious memory of a very deep and grave problem was at the age of 2 years old. And it was a very, very difficult thing for me as a little tiny type. But I found a way to help myself and to help the person involved even at that tender age. I went next door and got help. You know, if you sit around and think about your problems and how terrible they are, you are a defeatist. But if you think to yourself, God has given me this for my growth. Now let me take a good look at it. Let me dissect it. Is it really a problem? Or is it something that He has just sent me to work with? Now, if you take the positive attitude, certainly you're going to be a much happier person. And it's a challenge, you know, to work out a problem rather than to let it work you out. It is said that the body was just made to carry the brain around. And that's a very interesting thought, isn't it? The body was made to carry the brain around. I was listening to a tape the other day. It was a psychologist working with an individual. And this person said that you have to listen to your body. Do you believe that? Do you think that you have to listen to your bodies? Can your body speak to you? You have feeling in your body. You have feeling in your body. But where does anything come from, and where does it register before it reacts in your body? You take, for instance, a car coming right at you. You feel an electrical impulse going through every part of your body, don't you? It's just like it's going to get me right now, and it's just like an electrical current that goes all through your body. But did you not take that sight of that car coming in through one of the senses? This is true, but it immediately went to your brain, and your brain was the thing that set off the electrical charge that went all through your body. It's a good question. Mill it around. Think about it. The trouble is, you see, we take things just on the surface and we never stop to think about it. There are some people who, before you can get a sentence out of your mouth, are asking you why, how to do it, one question after another. You try to tell them, give them some help, tell them how to do things, and before you get the words out of your mouth, there comes more questions or arguments. How do I do this? Or I can't do this. When you aren't telling me how to do it. They never stop to explore the tremendous possibilities within themselves, to explore the caverns of their own being. And they must do that if they are to get any answers. Now you go to a spiritual person and you ask a question, what shall I do about this? What shall I do about that? I even had someone ask me once, do I love this man? Now, how in God's earth am I going to tell a woman if she loves a man? She's got to find that out for herself. Her heart is going to tell her. That's a part of your body, isn't it? It's feeling. But it is the part of the body that is hooked up with the consciousness, because you have to use your mind to think with. And you have to believe that you're going to get help before you can get it. Now it says that first, when we have a problem, we should ask. We ask for help. But always we ask for help with the idea of the problem in mind, instead of first putting the problem aside and communing with our Father God, who has the answer to all problems. If we would just put that idea out of our minds and go straight to Him, there wouldn't be all of the in-between places. Now, it also says to seek, and ye shall find. Seek, and ye shall find. Ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and ye shall find. Now, where do you seek? Are you going to seek outside of yourself? Or are you going to sit still? And are you going to meditate upon God and ask Him to direct you where to go? There are some people, when they have a problem, that just run helter-skelter all over the place. They go to this one, they go to that one, they get on the telephone and they ask this one for help, and what is your idea? And they never stop to sit down and have an idea of their own. They expect everybody else to do their thinking for them, to do their decision-making for them. And that is your responsibility alone. Why? Because it is your life. And if you permit somebody else to make your decisions for you, to tell you what to do, you will never grow. And then if it doesn't turn out right, you blame the other fellow. And you have only yourselves to blame, because you didn't go inside and solve your own problem. It's very necessary that you do that. It's an absolute must if you are to grow at all. You know, this mind is so tremendous. I've told you many, many times that you can go from here to Timbuktu in just a minute, or up amongst the stars and the moon and the sun and all of the different planets, if you will but sit still and seek God within yourself. Because in truth, as Brother Lawrence said, He is not far away. He is your very self. He is that great I am that I am. Why do we go outside looking for answers all the time when we have the answer to every problem, to every question, right within ourselves? And we think of God as being separate from us, but He is not. He is part and parcel of our very self. He is that self. So many people have said to me, and they said it to Master, and they've said it to many great spiritual teachers, they have said, but you are different. You know the answers. And they don't stop to think that I and everybody else was the same as they are in the beginning. It is what you put into it that makes the difference. It is this. Are you willing to go all the way, to give up all of the humanness within yourself? Does this mean that you're not going to be human afterwards if you do that? No. If you lay everything you are, everything you have at the feet of God, you will find Him, that infinite spirit within yourself. But you will come out, still living in a human body. You will be divine in your consciousness. There will be a tremendous change, and yet you will be human. Because you still have to live in this human world. You have to operate as a human being in order to relate to the people that you work with. And you don't want to do anything else. The difference is that you have become master instead of slave. That you can stand straight and tall and be yourself. Not what anybody else expects you to be, nor what they want you to be necessarily, but what God within you tells you that you should be, what you must be, and what you are. The discovery of the self is the greatest discovery in all of this wide world. You go to God for the answer to all of your problems, no place else. When you do that, you see, people seem to know. There's a story told by one of the disciples about Master. He was walking down the street one day with two or three of the disciples, and the man who had been drinking accosted him, and he said to him, "Hello, Jesus Christ," just like that. Master looked at him, and he grinned, and he said, "Hello there." And then he said, he looked deeply in his eyes, and he gave him some of the spirit that he had been drinking inside of himself. And the man seemed to be very definitely affected. He says, "Shay, what are you drinking?" And Master said to him, "I've been drinking something better than you have." He said, "It is a very strong and powerful potion." And it was as though the man's inebriation disappeared and something happened to him. There are many stories told about that. There's another woman who had bought a picture that had appealed to her many, many years before in a store, and she hadn't known who the picture was, who it was of. And years later, the autobiography came out, and there was Master's picture, and she said to her husband, "Why, there is the Master whose picture I bought." And another one had a vision one time of Master, and the words came to her that the Christ is coming into your life. And so not too long after that, she met the Master, and she saw that his face was the vision that she had seen. I myself, way back in 1954, was given a vision of my guru, and I was told that he was in truth a Christ soul. And he put in some of his earlier magazines, I think it was Inner Culture, the true second coming of the Christ. That's very interesting, isn't it? And yet, when I got that vision, that wasn't in the magazines at that time. And you can imagine how I felt when I looked at that magazine and saw that. Because there was a Christ-like man, if ever I saw one. The first time I ever laid my eyes on him, when he walked out on the platform, this tremendous big auditorium, and those beautiful, luminous eyes filled with the Spirit of God, his hair hanging down, very Christ-like face, and Christ-like in every part of his being and appearance. And then he opened his mouth, and he started to speak. And from 8 o'clock until 11, I stood absolutely spellbound, listening to this man of God from India explain to me the truth about the Christ worshipped by the Christians in the West. And for the first time in my life, he really made me realize that Christ was within myself. That he was equally present everywhere, in every single human being, in every atom of space, every bit of consciousness, that he was in truth the Son of God, the only begotten Son, but that he had come from the Father and the Mother God, and he had taken on every form in the universe. He took away the fear of sin, of hell, fire, and damnation. And he gave me a dream, a vision. And he told me that I could reach out for that dream and that vision. And if I did so, that I could find perfection within myself. I could find the light of God within myself. I could hear his voice. I could feel him. I could become one with him. And because of the words that he spoke, he so inspired me that he changed my whole life. It was a strange thing because I met him in September of 1925, and in November of that same year, a terrible tragedy happened in my life. And if I had not met my guru before that time and been given the strength to go through this tremendous experience, I don't think I could have stood it. I would have lost my mind, or I would have in some way suffered terribly. But because he had come into my life, he gave me beauty, he gave me inspiration, he gave me faith, and he gave me the certain knowledge that God was within him, and that if I called upon God within him, that I could get help. And never once in my life during his life did he fail me. And even after that, since he left the body, many's the time he has appeared to me, many's the time I have felt his presence so greatly that it was as though he was standing before me. I felt his help. I felt his presence. I felt his guidance in every part of my life. And whatever I am in God, I owe to this man of God. But I was glued to him totally. I couldn't see enough of him, and yet I only saw him 12 times in my life. Only 12 times. And yet I was never separated from him in spirit, because when he took hold of my hand that first evening and an electrical shock went through every part of my being, I became one with God within him for all the years to come, and perhaps for many, many lifetimes, because I couldn't conceive of ever taking initiation from anyone else, of ever calling anyone else master. And I call him master because he was master of himself, and he was the master who came to tell me, to teach me how I could also become a master and become one with God. He changed my whole life. He changed my whole world. And he himself said, as I have told you before, that if only one soul goes all the way to God, 25 generations follow afterward. Just imagine what a tremendous thing that is. And what a responsibility it is for each and every one who puts their feet on the spiritual path. You too have that opportunity if you will make the effort. But somebody else can't do it for you. You have to do it yourself. If you knock on the door of heaven, it will be opened unto you. But you can't expect it to be opened if you have your mind constantly on worldly things. If you constantly depend on yourself or other people or circumstances in your life. Just think, the gate of heaven is open to you. And it has been promised to you that if you will seek him first, that all of the other things in the whole wide world will be added unto you. All of the things of the Spirit, which should come first, and then every earthly thing which you need. I was speaking to a man not too long ago who is constantly reading books about finance. And the books that he is reading, they're telling about depressions. Depression is going to strike America most any day now. And they go on and on. All this dire foreboding. And so we were talking about it not too long ago, and he thought the man was a genius. I said, I think if anybody's going to experience a depression, that this man will bring it on. Because he puts out a book And he puts out all these dire predictions about a depression, and everybody who reads that book believes in it. Just like everybody who reads The Sleeping Prophet and Edgar Casey's works and some of the others, the scientists, believe that California is going to go in the ocean, New York is going to go in the ocean, England is going to go in the ocean, they're not going to exist anymore. And so with mass thought, you bring about an event that is perhaps not good. Now, if you could use that same power of thought to think that everything is going to be all right, and to build that and to do and be what you should be in God, you could prevent a catastrophe. That's the truth, because the mind is so powerful that it will go to work and act that way. But if we have sufficient belief in a catastrophe, it will happen, believe me. I remember many years ago, somebody who is still with me was taken in by a remark that I made, because I just read this book, The Sleeping Prophet. I was interested in it. And so at that time I was thinking about moving to Denver. Well, I went to Denver, and my husband didn't like Denver. And we went to California, and he didn't like California, so we came back to Seattle. But in the meantime, this person was going to move there. And at that time also, there were a great many quakes, and there was one particular place in South San Francisco, I've forgotten just what the name it was, Hayward or something like this, and I was staying in a house out there, and every morning I was waking with my bed going like this. It was really something to experience. And so this person said, "But Mother, you shouldn't go to California to live. Because just think, they're going to have this big earthquake and California is going to go in the sea. You must protect yourself." And I said, "I don't know why I should. I'd like to be where the action is." It's true. Because if I am all the way with God, if it is God's will that an earthquake happens and California goes into the ocean, somehow I'm going to be someplace else, maybe up in Victoria or New York or something else. I'm not going to worry about it, nor am I going to govern my life about somebody else's predictions. I am going to govern my life by what God tells me to do inside. And I do every moment of my life. Whatever He says, that's what I do. And if He tells me not to do something, I don't do it, because I have learned many, many years ago that if I go against my inner direction, I'm in trouble. And I don't like what happens when I'm in trouble. It hurts. I get myself involved in an awful mess sometimes. I did that about twice in my life, and I don't care to repeat the performance. Believe me. So whatever you build into your life in a positive fashion, this is what you're going to get out. So you have to ask, you have to seek, and you have to knock at the door for entrance into the gate of heaven. But you have to want to do this more than anything else in the world. And if you will do it, if you will think positively, if you will approach every need, every problem that you have with a positive attitude, then you are going to find that it works out. And what about the fact that you want something, and you want it very desperately, and yet it doesn't work out? We've talked much about, you do this and that and the other thing, but if it doesn't work out, why, it must be God's will, which of course is true. Where do you stop? Where do you draw the line? Well, God gave you good common sense. He gave you reason. He gave you intuition. And if you bump up against a problem and you get a constant no, 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 a closed door, no matter how hard you knock, you better listen to the fact that maybe you want to do that, but the other fellow doesn't. And so you leave it alone. And if you keep on doing that, you see, you stop your own ability to find something else that is better for you. Because many times God keeps us from being burned in the fires of our own desires. That was something that Master said many years ago. And I have always remembered that. Just like another saying, nobody can give you, nobody can hurt you unless you give them permission to do so. And still another one was that there are many people who try to cut off the heads of others in order to increase their own stature. Those things I remember very well. And still a fourth, which was the greatest of all. If you will all work together in love and in harmony, these teachings will sweep the world. How is the world going to change if each and every one of us doesn't do what we should do to meditate upon God day and night, to approach our problems in a proper way, and to have complete faith that they are going to be solved? Now, J.C. Penney one time, the head of these great penny stores, was asked if there weren't a great many problems in building such a tremendous business. And he said that for every problem he had been given, he was extremely grateful, because it was through the problems that had come to him that he had grown to where he then was. And certainly we know that he grew a long way and did an awful lot. So it all depends on your attitude. It depends on what you want out of life. There's some people that are always looking for a handout. They are looking for other people to do things for them. And they always wish that maybe they could do something, some of them, others not at all. They are content to live on humanity. And this is not right, because they are failing to really live. They stand at the gate and they beg for alms, and they fail to join the great procession of life that will make them grow in God, make them grow as a human being, and bring life's greatest reward to them in every direction. But they don't do that. You know, to me, life is a challenge. I love it. And each day I meet life head on. I never know what my day is going to be like, because each day I make a plan for the next day, and never am I able to carry it out, because God always has other ideas and He keeps me so busy. You wouldn't believe how busy I have been this last month. I've been getting to bed at 3:30 in the morning, getting up at 8 o'clock, and busy from the time I open my eyes when the first telephone call comes in, and some of them last 2 or 3 hours. And then in the afternoon I go places, or I see people, or this is happening or that is happening, and I lay my weary head on the pillow and I think, I wonder if I can make it another day sometimes, but I always do. And I couldn't do it by myself. God has to do it. This body has been through so much that I can tell you without any question of a doubt that if God didn't use it, if He didn't do every God-blessed thing that is done through there, I wouldn't be here. This body wouldn't be here. It would be literally impossible. So I have put my full faith, my full trust in Him, and I do what He directs me to do every moment. And if I think that I should be doing something and other things intervene, then and then alone I can think that it is His will. What else? I can't do the impossible. I'm only one person. I don't ever try to play Mrs. God, I can assure you. It's too big a job and I don't like it. It's too much responsibility. I'd rather give it all to you and let you do it. You know, if you can sort of give each one a little job to do and let them come along for the ride, well, everything gets done a lot faster that way. And that's how all of us grow, by helping one another, by loving one another, by serving one another, but above all by worshiping God. There is no problem in the world that is so great that you cannot overcome it. if you will really have the will to do it, if you will take the steps that are necessary, if you will rise above the problem and put your mind on God alone, if you do, your whole lives will change. And you will find that every effort that you had to make, every problem that you had to solve, made you better equipped to handle the next and greater problem. Until you see you become one with God, you become master of yourself, and then you are regarded as master for many. And you can guide them, you can direct them, you can help them to find the light on their own paths and to become one with God, which is the greatest service you can do any man. I keep repeating these things, and I will probably keep repeating them, as every single spiritual teacher does, repeat, repeat, repeat. You want to know why? Because until you become what I talk to you about, you have not yet taken the first step. You have to get in and do the work. And when you do it, then I will be able to go on to a different subject. So if you get bored once in a while listening to the same thing, remember that. Remember it.